working through what that symptom does and how can we deal with it? How can we overcome that obstacle?
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello and welcome to The Alzheimer's Podcast, episode 17. I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Thank you for joining me for another podcast, for my goal is always to empower you to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. As I mentioned in last week's episode, where I shared my interview with David Kramer, it's extremely important and invaluable that we listen to and learn from those who are living with Alzheimer's disease or another dementia. People with dementia know what is needed to help them fight back against this cruel disease. To help spread their message, I'm continuing to share my interviews I did a couple of years ago with people who are living with dementia. In August of 2015, I had a wonderful conversation with Lori Scherer, where she talked about how she and her husband Roy work one day at a time to implement strategies which allow them to stay active and enjoy life. I was pretty green when it came to recording quality audio at that time, so I've done my best to improve this recording so that you get the best experience possible. However, there may still be some parts that have less than stellar quality, but I truly believe you will find it acceptable and the content invaluable. In August 2013, Lori Scherer was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's and frontal temporal dementia at the early age of 55. Lori is an active dementia advocate and runs the website DementiaDaze.com. That's Daze as in D-A-Z-E. She's also staying physically and socially active as her and her husband, Roy, fight back against dementia. In fact, at the time of this interview in 2015, they had recently returned from a diving trip in Bonaire, which is an island in the Southern Caribbean. So in this episode, Lori and I talk about how she stays active and lives positively despite her dementia. So without further ado, here we go.
Welcome, Lori.
Hi, thank you for having me on your show, Mike.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure to have you here, and I'm looking forward to talking with you a little bit more. So you want to just tell us a little bit about your diagnosis, maybe, and just lead into some of the activities and stuff you do?
I started working when I was 10 years old. My dad owned a company, and, you know, when dad owns a company, everybody works. So I started working at 10. Career has always been real important to me. Worked out to vice president of bank, running their – I opened 3 telephone call centers, and I was vice president of their telephone and web center. Then found out actually I could make more money in sales than I could in management, and I'm good at sales, so I said, okay, well, I have the aggravation, and I went into sales and did very well. When I was at my last job, I found that things were getting really hard for me. I wasn't doing well. Things that came normally just normal to me weren't. And I started forgetting a lot of things. I couldn't organize work. I lost track of time. I would have a conversation with a customer for 2 hours and totally forget. So I knew something was wrong. After that job, then I started saying, something's really up here. And after I went through 6 months of diagnosis, including 8 weeks of total psychological and neurological testing, and they determined that I had early onset Alzheimer's and front and FTD, which of course then ended my career.
Right. Wow, such an early age, and so more common we're finding, and just but you're staying positive and you're living positively. I love that term with Alzheimer's. Do you want to tell us what that means? What does it mean to you to live positively with Alzheimer's?
You know, Alzheimer's ended my career days, ended my ability to spend money whenever I wanted to, but it didn't end my life. It changed my life. To me, living well with Alzheimer's, FTD, or any dementia means recognizing the symptoms of the disease when it's happening, recognizing what triggers it, and adjusting your life schedule accordingly. I know there are things that are going to take me when I'm a little bit of a confused stage and make it worse. I know there's things that are going to cause me to get confused or disoriented. So in order to live well, my husband and I work hard every day to find out what's causing the ups, the downs, and try and overcome that as much as possible. We can have a fabulous life, we can do things, we can live great, but we recognize where our cutoff point is and what it is. I had a family reunion at my I have a large house with a pool and all, and I had a large family reunion with 100 and some people that stayed for 4 days, pitched tents in the yard, and it was awesome. We had a great time, and then we did it again 4 years later. I can't do that anymore. I can't handle multiple conversations. When I get more than a couple people in the room, my mind no longer breaks up the voices. So whereas you can take and focus on one person talking in a room, I'm hearing all the conversations. I'm hearing all the background noise. So we've learned that we can't have 100 and some people here anymore, but we can still have 10 as long as I have a quiet place I can retreat to. With 100 and some, I had no quiet place to retreat to. But
So, Lori, that's you're not the first person I've heard talk about that lack of filtering, or you know, that loss of filtering. And when you have people over now, smaller groups, they're aware of the challenge you face in that situation, and they possibly they try to. I know it's hard when you're being social. It's hard to remember to, you know, let one person talk at a time because everybody gets joy, you know, laughing and stuff, right? But I'm sure you've shared it with them, and they try to, try to accommodate that a little bit.
It is kind of difficult. Like Easter dinner at my house, and we had, I don't know, maybe 12 people here. We share with everybody what's going on with me. And the reason for that, if you don't share with people and they're telling you a story or they're telling you about something and you don't remember it, then they're going to think you just didn't listen to them. You didn't pay attention. They're not important. Whereas by sharing it with people, they now understand it's not that I'm not listening. It's that I can't comprehend what you're saying all the time. I can't retain it. So to us, we found that sharing it with people it just is so much better because they think better of us, and we can talk to them. What I do now is wherever we go, whether it's to somebody else's house or we have people here, my iPad goes with me everywhere. My headphones go with me everywhere. When I'm in a situation where the lack of being able to filter is just too much, I take my iPad, I find a quiet place, even if I have to go for a walk and sit under a tree. I put on my music, not somebody else's music, but my music, and I just let my mind go for a little bit, let it go. If I then still am off skelter, my husband brings me a glass of wine. I have a glass of wine, my music, and just kind of let my mind take a rest. sometimes I can go back to the group, sometimes I can't. Easter, I was able to take a break and come back. Now, by then, they had finished all the food, and I was like, ha! Not nice, but I was able to do that.
Interesting. It's nice that technology's helping you in that way. I don't hear of technology helping. I'm a technology guy, and I'm always looking for ways for technology to help, and I always think it just falls so short. And
no, I was a technology person too, and I just think I need my iPad goes wherever I go.
That's great to hear. What other kind of activities or things do you and Roy like to do together?
I like scuba diving. Scuba diving is just awesome, and that's so much fun. Horseback riding. Always loved horseback riding a lot. Biking, gardening, karaoke. Used to love karaoke. Unfortunately, I really can't do that much anymore because the crowd just is not something I'm able to handle. But and since I'd always been a writer, but I'd never done anything with it, and since my diagnosis, I've gotten a lot more involved with blogging and writing articles, and that's kind of a release for me because I can take what I'm feeling and share it and help other people with this disease. So important that you find what your avenue is to help other people.
Right.
It helps you to help others.
I see. I just was talking to a caregiver who also started writing, and it does really help anybody. Get it out and all. I want to ask you about the. You talked about horseback. I want to get to the diving definitely, but
Me too.
Horseback riding kind of intrigues me because I just recently wrote an article about things that the care partners can do, the person with dementia and their caregiver, if you will, what they can do together that kind of has a therapeutic, spiritual, if you will, thing. And horseback riding, because I'm in San Diego County, and it's a huge equestrian area, and there's a ranch right down the road for autistic children, and you can bring. I asked the guy, "Can we bring people with Alzheimer's there?" And they were very open armed. And I haven't arranged that yet, but I want to. But does the horseback riding kind of? Have you done that recently, or does it have any? Am I blowing smoke when I say it's got a therapeutic benefit?
I did. I did that in Bonaire. Actually, we went again. I had the privilege of spending a summer on a farm in Missouri where. I get up in the morning, go out, grab a horse, saddle him up, and go. Oh, my golly, that's just an awesome feeling. And I love horseback riding. I can ride horse or bareback or western. Had my first experience doing English. Didn't care for that as much. But horseback riding is very therapeutic to me. When it's free rein, didn't enjoy it as much when you're in a trail. I felt stifled, to tell you the truth. It was like, come on, get going, move on. But riding is when you're going through the country and you can just take time to look around. And in this case, look at the cactus. I couldn't smell the roses because there weren't any. It was cactus, but... view the cactus and all. It's just very wonderful in mind. It really relaxes your mind. Hiking, hiking is fantastic to do with your partner. If you find some woods to hike in or a trail, it's so quiet. You can listen to the birds, see the trees. That is such a calming effect.
I absolutely agree. I'm definitely a hiker.
Are you?
I want to move to the. Well, not maybe not move, but visit the northwest a little more up in Washington State and Oregon, because the trees and the ferns and the trails are just so, they're bigger than life, and it just smells good, it feels good, and yeah, it's a spiritual thing for me, as well as gardening. Mm-hmm. You mentioned gardening, and I definitely can get lost in my gardening for a long time. So in Bonaire, so the horseback riding and the scuba diving, I think that might be the main reason you went there. Had you been there before, or is that, I think you mentioned you'd been diving for probably 20 some plus years.
My husband and I started diving in 1991, and we had gone down to Cozumel, Mexico, and actually did some snorkeling, and we thought it would be wonderful to be down there with the fish and see them. But there was one problem. I didn't know how to swim. So we came home, and he saw an ad for scuba diving, and he said, let's do it. And I said, okay, maybe I better learn to swim first. So I went to the Y, taught myself how to swim, signed up for a scuba course. And when we signed up, this instructor had no idea I had just learned how to swim at 33 years old. I had just learned how to swim. So we actually started diving in 1991, and we've been to a whole bunch of places, Bahamas, Bermuda, Mexico a couple times, all over. And we did go to Bonaire once. Love diving. It's so peaceful and calm, and you see so many things when you're diving that you don't see anywhere else. The colors are exquisite, and it's just awesome.
So that's kind of the opposite of all that family stimulation, right? Because when you're diving, I've never actually dove, but I mean, you're underwater, so you're not going to hear other things. You're going to be in your own real focused world, right? And what's that like? Was it any different for you having dementia doing it versus prior to your, diagnosis?
The diving itself was awesome. Let me first tell you why we chose Bonaire. My husband and I have realized that we can live very positively and happily with dementia, but you have to weigh out what you're doing. The reason we chose Bonaire, and we thought long, on my bucket list was one more dive. I wanted one more. But as my symptoms progress, it's like, can we do this? Can we handle this? We chose Bonaire because, number one, almost anywhere else you dive, you have to get on a boat that's crowded with people getting their dive gear together and talking, and drive half an hour or whatever, an hour, to get to your dive spot. Our feeling was, by the time I got there, I would be so overwhelmed with the confusion it wouldn't work. In Bonaire, you drive down the road, you see a big yellow rock that says a dive site on it. You put your equipment on, you get in the water, you drop down, and that's it. You don't have to be with other people. Number two, although we've been diving for a long time and we were both assistant teachers, I didn't feel comfortable going diving with just Roy. The reason is, if I got confused while I was underwater, I could hurt not only myself, but him as well. I didn't want to chance that. So we had a group of friends from Indian Valley Scuba that were going on a dive trip to Bonaire. And Dave, who's the owner of the shop, has actually taught dive training for people with physical disabilities. So I felt very comfortable that he would be aware to help if I was in any kind of stress. So we planned our dives so that we were diving with Dave on the first dive, and both Roy and Dave kept looking at me to make sure I was okay. And then I did so well on that one. Our really good friends, Ray and Tom, started diving with us, and they were awesome because they took the time to constantly make sure I was okay and not confused, and that's what was important. it was so awesome to go diving again. It was great. When I, on my first dive, Roy went to get our weights and he said, hook up the gear. I looked at the gear. It was foreign to me. I positively could not remember how to put together scuba gear that I've been doing since 1991. I got frustrated. I almost started to cry. I was so upset. It's like, and our friend Ray saw me and came over and said, hey, Laurie, what's up? I said, I can't remember how to do this. He put it together for me. He said, it's okay. You're going to have a great dive. We can do this. And I did. From that point on, our friends all pitched together, and when Laurie was going diving, my equipment was all ready. And because of them pitching in, I was able to have just a fabulous time. And instead of one dive, I did 7 dives, and it was just awesome.
Wow, that's great. That's really awesome. What I love about that is that I one reason I do these interviews is to help people see that people with dementia, with just a little extra assistance and compassion, can do so many things. And then on the other side, there's the people with dementia who may be shielding themselves or hiding their disease from others and not empowering their friends around and family around them to rally around them and help, and really want to, you know, partnering with people such as yourself, kind of change that so that more people with dementia can have those positive experiences and live life to the fullest. So I really love that, and it's great to hear that they were able to assist and get through that so you could do that. So now prior to the starting the show, we were talking a little bit, and you were talking about that, well, that sounded great, and you had a little trouble, we'll say, and all, but you and Roy planned for quite a while for this trip. It's not like you just booked your flight, you know, last week and threw together your suitcase and jumped on a plane, right? You took a little bit of time.
We did. I started packing 1 month before our trip. And what I did was, as I selected each outfit I wanted to take, I put it on, the whole outfit, took a picture of it, my husband took a picture of it, and I marked each article. That way I made sure I didn't have pink underwear with purple polka dots with white shorts, you know, that I had the appropriate clothing to go with the items. So when I went to pack, I pulled out each picture a week beforehand, made sure everything was washed, ironed, whatever, and then put in the suitcase a week in advance. Reason for that is I can't put things into perspective so much anymore. I used to do business trips all the time, and I'd take out the suitcase the night before and go, okay, I need this, and this. I'm not capable of doing that. So preparation was important from that aspect. The other thing was, we were real concerned, since it was an international flight, we're very concerned about 200 or however many people were on the plane showing up at the airport at the same time and hanging out in the lounge. So we knew right off that confusion and talking would be overwhelming to me. Just for the heck of it, my husband checked into first class, and they had raised the price of the regular ticket. They had not raised the price of the first class ticket. Going regular class, since we had scuba gear, we each were going to have 2 suitcases. At $25 a pop, that was $50 it was going to cost us for suitcases. The first class seat was only $60 more when you include the $50 baggage. So for essentially $60, let me think about this. I'm going first class for $60 more. No brainer. That was important because by going first class, it allowed me to use United's lounge before the trip. So instead of being in a room with a bunch of people, I was in a nice lounge where they give you drinks and coffee and orange juice and everything. Quiet. First class on the plane, we were afraid of being stuck next to someone with three kids and yelling and screaming. It was nice and quiet and calm. So right off, it started our trip off right. Plus, my brother arranged for us to have a hotel room the night before our trip, right next to Newark Airport, which is like a 3-hour drive for us. So instead of getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to drive to Newark, we were able to just get up and get a shuttle to the plane. Again, we, wherever possible, we took steps to avoid the stress and get the trip off on the right path. And we did that. And it was fabulous. We setting the trip out right, making lots of plans and preparations, really helped us to have a great trip. We also made arrangements to have a single room as opposed to on a dive trip. Normally a bunch of people share like an apartment. Although we loved doing that because we got to spend time with our friends, we knew that if I was having a downtime, not having a place to escape was not good. So we arranged to have a single room for us, and it was just heavenly. But preparation was such a key.
Right, right. So that's very, I'm happy you're sharing that. And so although we're talking about really a big trip for anybody, but those coping mechanisms or strategies that you and Roy and other family have put in together can be probably done, you know, on a daily basis, right? So you kind of look ahead of what you're going to be encountering or what symptoms may arise and cause you a challenge. And then you think about how we can try to avoid that situation or deal with that situation should it arise. Is that kind of what you and Roy do?
Oh, exactly. And when I first was diagnosed with dementia, I got to the typical, what's very common, woe is me, this is horrible, I'm going to be in a wheelchair and not knowing my loved ones so soon. And I really went through a point where I did allow the disease to control me, to control my actions, my feelings, my thoughts. It was a very depressing state. We then said, wait a minute, let's work one day at a time. And so we started looking at each symptom and working through what that symptom does and how can we deal with it? How can we overcome that obstacle? I love Jim Nabors when he sings "To Dream the Impossible Dream." It's just fabulous. And that's how we live our life, no matter what the obstacle is. All right, here's the obstacle. We can't be in large crowds, but we really want to do this dive trip. How can we do it? And it's a matter of sitting down and saying, okay, if we go to Bonaire, we're not on a boat. Okay, if we do this, we're not. Many challenges are like that. At home, I've had a really tough time cooking. Although I will say I've always hated it anyway. I wish we didn't come up with a way to overcome this obstacle because it's not me. But I had a real challenge burning things, forgetting to put ingredients in. So, all right, we need to deal with this. Not cooking is not an option. So what can we do? So we figured out that my main problem was you take a recipe. It has the ingredients here. And then the steps. But I'd get to add milk, and how much milk was I supposed to add? So I have the ingredients, and then in the steps it says add 1/4 cup of milk. Right in the steps. So we've worked we've worked out a process for a lot of things in our life. We've shared the disease with our family and friends. When our friends come over, our family come over, they understand. If I disappear, leave me alone. I just need to get my head back in gear.
All right. Well, that's a really neat concept there. I know you also have a guide for how to talk with someone on the phone. And so you and Roy, you're talking about these different ways of putting in processes, and this recipe book for people, that's a pretty neat idea. Someone should go out there and create one so that we don't have to create them from scratch. But actually, that'd be a good activity to do too, I guess. But I would like something like that, because I have a tendency when I cook is I have my recipe up in a different room on my monitor, and I find myself running back and forth. What was I supposed to do? But that's definitely not the same challenge you're facing, of course. But that's really interesting. You need to see how, you guys are living positively with Alzheimer's and putting in processes so that you can maximize your time. It sounds like it made for a wonderful diving experience in Bonaire. Was there anything else about that? We're coming up on the 30-minute mark, so I kind of just want to start wrapping up. Is there anything else from that trip that you guys took that you want to talk about or comes to mind?
Well, I think one thing I'd say is when you have dementia, I don't necessarily suggest going out and doing new things. For me, diving was something I had done often. There was one dive and only one dive where I started becoming confused and I zoned out. And I just started letting myself drift and drift. Fortunately, Roy was there with me, grabbed my hand and pulled me. I might have dropped down to 300 feet without even, I was zoned out. So if you're not used to the activity, be really careful. The other thing I'd really like to push is you can live positively or live well with dementia, provided you and your care partner listen and watch for the challenges and changes and take steps to tackle them early. Nothing should stop you as long as you are listening to those symptoms, being aware of them, and together figuring out ways to overcome what obstacles. Next month I'm going skydiving. You could join me on that.
I'm going to pass.
I went 100 feet down. I might as well go 100 feet up.
I love it. I had some really great advice. I appreciate you sharing that, and I hope that inspires some people. But maybe not necessarily to jump out of that perfectly good airplane. I think that's wonderful. I like to go diving. I live in an area where I really have no excuse, so maybe I should be. Although it's not like the Atlantic around Florida or the Caribbean, but that's just wonderful. And I think I read something where you guys might be planning a long RV trip at some point. So I remember I talked to you or I emailed you that if you ever come to California and visit the Sierras or something, that maybe we could meet up at that point. So, but I know that's
2018.
All right. Well, that's not that far away. I mean, that'll be here before we know it. So. Well, with that, Lori, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. And I'd like to really thank you very much, Lori, for all that insightful conversation.
Wow, wasn't that a great conversation? I personally enjoyed hearing it again. As Lori shares, to live positively, families must look ahead to anticipate what may cause symptoms to occur and put processes in place to either avoid the trigger or cope with it more effectively. So be sure to check out Lori's website, dementiadays.com. That's days with a Z. And as always, I will provide a link to it as well as any other mentioned resources in the show notes at togetherinthis.com/episode17. Remember, we must listen and learn from people who are living with dementia. To help people with dementia and their families live positively despite dementia, we must support and empower them to stay active and participate. I'd like to thank you for taking time to listen to this episode of the Alzheimer's Podcast. And if you're enjoying this podcast, be sure to rate and review it on your favorite podcast provider. It will mean the world to me. Goodbye and have a positive day. You've been listening to the Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.